This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and five specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. Good afternoon. I'm Lisa Labas, and this is The Rundown. Jewish leaders in Chicago are mourning the lives lost this weekend in Australia, but they say they won't live in fear as Hanukkah celebrations continue this week. My colleague Michael Puente reports 15 people were killed on the first night of Hanukkah in Australia. Earlier this month, leaders with the Anti-Defamation League met in Australia to discuss rising anti-Semitism. Rebecca Weininger works with the ADL in Chicago and says the local community will continue to practice their faith.
We are not shying away from the traditional practices of bringing light to cast out the darkness, remembering the story of Judah Maccabee and the resilience that it took to stand up for our identity when Jews were being persecuted.
She urges the city of Chicago to adopt legislation to protect people in the Jewish community. Actor and film director Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle Singer were killed Sunday in their Los Angeles home. Reiner was known for directing beloved films that spanned genres and generations, from When Harry Met Sally to A Few Good Men. He also was a passionate liberal activist. Reiner appeared at a WBEZ event in September to celebrate the release of a book about his cult classic film, This Is Spinal Tap, and he talked about the current political movement in this country.
We've been the longest living democracy ever. We certainly haven't done everything right. We've done a lot of things wrong, but we go in fits and starts to move in the right direction.
Reiner also said his 1995 film, The American President, celebrated what a good president should be, a person who honored the rule of law and the Constitution. Some anti-violence advocates want the Chicago Transit Authority to allow violence interrupters to patrol the transit system. My colleague Anna Savchenko reports the ask comes as the Trump administration is threatening CTA funding over safety concerns. T.O. Hardman works with Violence Interrupters, a nonprofit that tries to prevent violence through conflict mediation. He says if his workers were allowed to patrol CTA, there would be fewer high-profile attacks. One woman recently was set on fire on a CTA train. Another woman in a wheelchair was allegedly sexually assaulted by a male rider. Hardiman says violence interrupters already have inroads with people who are likely to commit violence.
We have the relationships already. So when the guys may see the violence interrupters on the trains, they may be more prone to talk with the violence interrupters before they go and try to hurt somebody.
The CTA did not respond to a request for comment. And the Chicago Blackhawks have placed Connor Bedard on injured reserve. He has an upper body injury. Bedard got hurt in the final seconds of Friday night's game in St. Louis. The 20-year-old center attempted to win a draw to give his team one last chance, but he was knocked down by Blues center Braden Schenn. You're listening to The Rundown. The move-out deadline has passed for the last residents of a Chicago apartment building raided in the fall by federal immigration agents. A judge ordered this troubled South Shore building vacated by last Friday. She called it a fire trap. She also appointed a manager to secure the property and help residents relocate. Now, tenants say that help was merely a check and a list of phone numbers to call. My colleague Esther Yunji Kang spent some time with one resident as he scrambled to figure out where he's going to go from here.
It's Wednesday, 2 days before the final moving day, and it's snowing outside. In the lobby of the building at 7500 South Shore Drive, the heat is still out, and a group of people are huddled over a desk. Representatives from Freedman Communities, the court-appointed building manager, are offering checks to tenants and collecting keys. Many residents have moved out by now. Some made arrangements with friends and family. Others got help from the city or from local nonprofits and found new places to live. But there's still a handful of people with nowhere to go. Darren Hightower is one of them. He picks up his first check, and we head to the third floor in an elevator that had been broken for months, but is working today.
It's a mess in here.
We walk into Darren's one-bedroom unit. There are boxes and furniture and tools scattered around, and a space heater in every room. But it's a nice layout, and you can see the makings of a decent bachelor pad. In fact, Darren remembers the first time he toured this place, more than 2 years ago. It wasn't perfect, but it was affordable, and the location was great.
It was decent. You got the beach down the street. I worked off of 71st in South Chicago, so that's 5-minute commute to work at the time.
A few years before he came to this now infamous building, Darren, who's 41, had moved to Chicago from Camden, New Jersey. He fell in love with the big city.
I seen a lot of opportunities as far as, like, you know, a lot of black businesses and everything. And there's so many attractions here that you can see, you know. It was welcoming.
But not long after he moved into the building, he hurt his wrists at his warehouse job and had to have surgery. In 2024, a new property manager took over. Several migrants moved into the building, and so did some squatters. The manager began neglecting the building's upkeep. Inside Darren's living room, a massive leak in the ceiling damaged his belongings. Rodents and insects infested the building and eventually his unit. And then the elevators went out. One day in 2024 in the lobby, a wheelchair-bound neighbor asked Darren for a slice of bread.
You know, most people ask you for money. So I'm like, what's wrong? And he told me, like, bro, I've been stuck in this lobby for 2 days because the elevator broke down. And I'm like, damn, that hurt me. But I wanted to carry him upstairs so bad, but I'm dealing with the surgeries and everything. I really wanted to carry that man upstairs. I hated hearing that right there. Like, why are you doing us like that? You know what I'm saying?
The incident affected him so much that he called a tenants' rights hotline and started organizing residents in his free time.
I started talking to people. Bang, 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 bang. What are you going through in here? Da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay, look, go door to door with me. Talk to these people.
The tenant union gained some steam, but as time wore on, Darren's neighbors grew discouraged that they weren't seeing quick results. The numbers dwindled. And then, on the night of September 30th this year, a swarm of federal immigration agents raided the building. They rappelled onto the roof from a helicopter, kicked down doors, and zip-tied residents. They ultimately arrested dozens of migrants, but also a handful of U.S. citizens. Darren missed the whole thing. He happened to be sick in the hospital that night, which, in hindsight, he's grateful for.
My anxiety probably would have freaked me out, man. Like, I always think things happen for a reason.
He came home from the hospital at 3 a.m. and found a ransacked building. In the days that followed, there was a media frenzy. And then, just as swiftly as they arrived, the cameras were gone. But the tenant union did come back. Residents held press conferences and demanded more resources. As the building moved through foreclosure court, the heat shut off and never came back on. On this day, I can see Darren's breath in the air when he talks.
I'm here with you, but I'm still thinking about everything I have to do today. I'm still thinking about, am I calling out of work tomorrow? You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking about, okay, am I going to get a hotel?
Since he found out about the Friday move out 2 weeks ago, he's applied for a bunch of apartments, but has not heard back. His reduced paycheck and a recent bankruptcy have made things hard. He's still making calls today.
They didn't negotiate with the pricing on that one either?
In the meantime, he does have a younger sister who lives nearby.
She has a door open for me, but my sister has a full home, you know what I'm saying? She has 4 kids, she has a man, and she has a mother-in-law that she helps take care of.
So he's planning to crash at a hotel or on a friend's couch over the weekend. And then after that, he's not sure.
Should I just take these checks, pack up, and move? Should I just go, start somewhere new?
While we talk, a squatter he calls Unk comes knocking a few times. Darren greets him cheerfully each time. He gives Unk some food, a sweater, a roll of toilet paper, a can of beer. As for the rest of his belongings, Darren's renting a van to deliver his bed that he sold to someone online. And he's putting some things in storage. But everything else, he has to leave behind. Esther Yunji Kang, WBEZ News.
Weather cloudy, breezy, very cold today, high in the mid-20s. Tonight, partly cloudy, low in the upper teens. And Tuesday, a little milder, sunny and breezy with a high in the mid-30s. You can find the latest news whenever you want at WBEZ.org or on your radio at 91.5 FM. I'm Lisa Labas. Thanks for listening.